Global tensions are up. Oil prices are up.
But as far as Wall Street's concerned, Ben Bernanke is living down to expectations.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bob Moon, in for Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for downloading our podcast from marketplace.org. It's Tuesday, the first day of March. Coming up, Wall Street shows no sign of losing its appetite for risk, thanks in large part to confidence in the Federal Reserve Chairman. He's addressing the Senate Banking Committee today, and despite ongoing unrest in Libya, expect no surprises from Mr. Bernanke.
Later, it's Back to the Future for one of the most familiar icons of the 1960s. Those stories straight ahead on Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke is giving another of his twice-a-year reports to Congress today. He's talking to the Senate Banking Committee, which is likely to grill at some point the Fed chief on what the central bank is doing to kick the economy into higher gear. It also wants to know how the Fed is reacting to oil prices that have been going up, up, up in the wake of turmoil in the Mideast and in North Africa. Len Blum is with us. He's a managing partner from Westwood Capital, and he's with us from Long Island. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Doing well. So last time he was on Capitol Hill, Mr. Bernanke talked about his confidence in this economy and the recovery. But that was before Egypt, and that was before these oil prices started really shooting through the stars. I mean, what can he say about those?
Right. I think that's right, Steve. And I think that Bernanke is going to say that, he's cautiously optimistic about the economy. His comments are going to be tempered, and he's going to say that, his optimism about the economy are tempered by oil prices, which are all about political instability in the Middle East. There are two things that investors are really looking for. One is the comments that Bernanke makes about the economy, and the second will be hints that Bernanke gives on the direction of interest rates.
Is there anything he can really do about it, though, Len?
That Bernanke can?
The oil prices, yeah. I mean, can he offset it in one way or another?
Well, I think that if Bernanke is concerned about rising oil prices, that means that the economy will grow slower, and but there's a risk of inflation. To offset the economy growing slower, he can continue buying bonds, which has the effect of lowering interest rates and stimulating the economy. But if he's very concerned about inflation, he'll be more cautious about buying bonds and lowering interest rates. Net-net, I don't think inflation's much of a risk in this economy, and I don't think Bernanke thinks so either, just because we have such a worldwide glut of labor capacity and assets.
And what else does that mean, quickly, in just about 10 seconds, what else does it mean for you and me?
Well, for the consumer, the consumers are concerned about the price of gas at the pump, and that, along with their concern about unemployment and housing prices, continues to put a damper on everything. And consumer spending makes up about 70% of gross domestic product in this country, so it's an important thing.
And it's going to have a big effect. You're right. Len Blum from Westwood Capital, we thank you for being with us this morning.
Thanks, Steve.
Let's get to the market angle of all this. Traders still seem to have an appetite for more risk. Julie Niemann is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis and is on the line with us. Julie, even before Mr. Bernanke offered any reassuring words, Wall Street already seemed satisfied in the face of everything else.
Well, Wall Street basically says he's going to stay the course because you can't argue with success. The market's up 25%. The economy's recovering. Now, it's not robust, but it's in the right direction. We're only growing about half of what it usually does after a recession. Of course, there are big concerns by Bernanke over real estate and jobs. We could slide back. But he truly believes no surprises. He'll telegraph any punches early. If he makes any changes, he's going to make clucking noises first, and he'll attach a time frame.
And yet we've got $4 a gallon gas in some places. Why isn't that more of a concern on Wall Street?
And Wall Street's totally blowing it off. Consumers, they say, are used to it now. We're not likely to carve out much of the growth rate. Sure, spending's likely to continue to rise. You pour cash, though, into the gas tank, not into the into the grocery cart. It can have a big impact. But the big reason Wall Street's blowing it off is simply because there's no other place to put the money. Do you go into bonds? Well, we're at 0% interest rates. Into commodities at record new highs. Real estate looks attractive, but it's really scary. So what we're looking at now is Wall Street needs some place place to put the money, and it's into stocks, and that's where it's going.
Julie Niemann is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company. Thank you.
You bet.
President Obama is offering to give states more leeway in opting out of key requirements of the new federal health care law, but he still wants them to meet the law's objectives of providing affordable, comprehensive coverage. Now, under health care reform, Americans who buy insurance through health care exchanges are guaranteed access to essential medical care. But what is essential? The Institute of Medicine, which advises Uncle Sam, is meeting in the next few days to hash all that out, and Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Here's the rub.
Everybody's definition of essential is going to be different and unique.
Tom O'Malia teaches medical management at the University of Southern California. For instance, the law says maternity care should be covered, but does that include fertility treatments? Prescription drugs are essential, but is Viagra? And what about speech therapy, say for kids with autism? Stuart Spielman is policy advisor for Autism Speaks.
We are talking about doing interventions that can change the direction of a child's life. This isn't a frill.
But these treatments can drive up costs. Bradley Herring is a health economist at Johns Hopkins University.
So the fundamental tension here is the health insurance premium is going to, as a result, generally be a little more expensive.
The Institute of Medicine is expected to give its recommendations later this year. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Trading on the stock market still has yet to resume in Cairo, where the Egyptian Stock Exchange is still closed. It's been closed for about a month now.
When in doubt, head for the comfort of pizza. Domino's just posted a higher quarterly profit. For more numbers, stocks, and a lot of other ones, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, March 1st. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bob Moon. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world.
The price of oil is stable today, around $97 a barrel. That's despite Libya's oil chief saying chaos has cut production there by half. Opposition forces to Colonel Muammar Gaddafi continue to get closer to Tripoli. One place they've already, those opposition forces have already staked a claim, is Benghazi in the east. As part of Marketplace's continuing coverage of the region, the BBC's Kevin Connolly is with us from Benghazi. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning, Steve.
If a civil war were to break out there, Kevin, which seems possible now, would this humanitarian crisis in eastern Libya, would that get worse?
I think there are two separate issues here. The first is that outside trade is effectively impossible at the moment for all Libyans. And the second is that most foreigners who are living here are, of course, trying to get out, Americans, British, French and German among them. There's no question that a humanitarian problem is growing here because Libya is a centrally controlled economy and central control has simply broken down.
Let's talk a little bit about the economy for just a moment, because the U.S. has seized a lot of Libyan assets. The EU has pushed through some sanctions as well, and oil has been greatly curtailed there. Do you see any of that on the ground where you are?
In Benghazi, at a very basic level, the economy is continuing to function. Shops are open for business. A lot of offices are open. But Libya's economy is entirely based on the fact that it is an oil-exporting nation. Anything which turns off the taps of the oil industry is going to affect the Libyan people in a very short period of time. And crucially, Libyan banknotes are printed in Britain, and the British moves against the Libyan economy include the embargoing of an export of banknotes. So literally, money will start to run out very soon.
All right, the BBC's Kevin Connolly in Benghazi. Kevin, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Even as some formerly stable countries in the Middle East fall into civil unrest and chaos, others are now trying to rebuild their economies and legal institutions. That's what's going on in Egypt, where Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman filed this report from Cairo.
It took me a long time to get the specs right. Acoustic studies to lighting.
Veteran newspaper publisher Hisham Essam is showing me around a gutted warehouse where he's building his newest media venture. He had to raise $5 million for the startup.
A lot of people were saying, well, Hisham has a good track record, but we're going to be in trouble with Mubarak if we invest with him.
That's because Essam's previous papers had an irritating habit of irritating the authorities. Now those authorities are out, and the investors are in on the ground floor of a more promising business.
They're saying, we invested with you and it was high risk. And now we're just going to get so many people buying shares.
Revolution often breeds instability, but Hisham Essam and other entrepreneurs here believe that with political reform and financial transparency, their country will eventually be a better place to make an honest Egyptian pound.
Well, I can tell you in a good environment, I can grow at 30% or maybe 40% year over year.
That's Metat Khalil, a very successful telecom entrepreneur. His company has grown to 3,000 employees and $400 million in revenue by selling cell phones and internet to Egypt's growing middle class. The company could have grown faster, but Khalil says he routinely turned down government contracts when asked to pay bribes.
I think the future will be much better for Egypt. However, I think the coming 8 months will be very, very difficult time.
Khalil thinks it'll take the military at least that long to hold elections, placate workers demanding higher pay, and get banking and the stock market going again. In the meantime, foreign investors might see all the uncertainty and hold back. And multinationals could put expansion plans on hold, says Hisham Fahmy of the American Chamber of Commerce in Egypt.
That's the price of democracy. We've tried the stable dictatorship. Now we're trying the little unstable democracy. I think it's in everybody's interest for this experiment, revolution, to succeed in Egypt.
The economic future of the Arab world's largest country, with 80 million people, hangs in the balance. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The economics of oil have changed a lot in the last few months. Here's proof. The Obama administration has given the go-ahead for a company to officially start deepwater drilling again in the Gulf of Mexico. The government issued the first deepwater drilling permit since the BP oil spill. From Washington, here's Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer.
The permit goes to Noble Energy for a well about 70 miles off the Louisiana coast. Noble had just started drilling the well 4 days before BP's Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded. After that, all deepwater drilling had to stop, and all drillers had to apply for new permits. Chris Skrabowski is an oil industry analyst in London. He says more permits are waiting for approval. The Gulf has become even more attractive recently because of the unrest in the Middle East.
I mean, where would you rather spend your dollars? I mean, it's not really a difficult question. To spend them in the Gulf of Mexico would be much more attractive than investing them in some of these other countries.
Skrabowski says to get the permit, Noble Energy had to prove it could contain a blowout. It'll be using the same capping technology that finally stopped the BP spill. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
A decision by the European Court of Justice has left insurance companies on the continent reeling. The court ruled that men and women must be treated exactly the same way, as in charged the same premiums for insurance policies. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Utter madness, said one member of the European Parliament, a setback for common sense. He was reacting to the latest ruling from the European Court of Justice. In Europe, insurance companies use gender to assess risk. They do the same in the United States. But the European Court has ruled that breaches EU rules on gender equality. This means that insurance companies here will no longer be able to charge higher car insurance premiums to young men, even though statistically they're more likely to drive dangerously and have accidents than young women. Malcolm Tarling of the Association of British Insurers deplores the ruling.
Gender has been an important risk factor that insurers take into account for many years, and it's enabled us to set premiums that accurately and fairly reflect the risk.
He says the judgment could also mean that women will pay higher premiums for their life insurance, even though they are statistically likely to live longer than men. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Kevin Tostado dreams of being a Monopoly champion, Bob. Mm-hmm. This filmmaker debuts his documentary of the people of Monopoly Nation this Friday. There's some interesting characters in this film. Tostado traveled the world, and he met people that take the real estate board game very, very seriously, like one woman who decked her bathroom completely out with all kinds of Monopoly. Like she had the tile floors and shower curtains and even the faucet handles on her faucet that were those little shoes that you can use as a player piece. Remember the little shoe?
Right.
I always tried to avoid the shoe.
I always liked the dog.
I liked the dog, too. Yeah. I did, and there was always the hat. I mm-hmm. liked the hat. Then there's the guy who tattooed, if you can believe this, a replica of the Monopoly board on his back.
Do not pass go.
Thank you.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, March 1st. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis, also known as Radio Chio on Twitter.
Today, Wisconsin's governor is expected to release his budget proposal. Governor Walker has already ignited controversy by challenging state unions. He wants to restrict collective bargaining as a way to address the state's budget problems. But is Wisconsin's budget really worse than other states? Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has answers.
Starting in July, Wisconsin faces an expected budget shortfall of $1.8 billion for the next year. That's about 13% of the state's total budget. Nick Johnson with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities puts Wisconsin's shortfall in perspective.
The nationwide average budget shortfall among all the states is about 20% of state spending. So Wisconsin's budget shortfall is certainly significant, but smaller than the national average.
Just about every state faces some kind of budget gap. Nevada's red ink represents about 45% of its budget. Texas and New Jersey both face shortfalls that exceed 30% of their budgets. Ohio is more in line with Wisconsin at around 11%. Like Wisconsin, Ohio is also considering changes to collective bargaining that it says are needed to balance the budget. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
We've talked a lot about the skyrocketing cost of oil, but the cost of food continues to rise as well. The price of corn and wheat is up more than 50% over last year. Marketplace's Adrian Hill now from the Sustainability Desk, and why we're not seeing such dramatic spikes at the grocery store.
There's a lot to learn from this unpretentious loaf of supermarket bread. Take it, flip it around, and check out what's in it. You'll see a couple ingredients that have been making headlines. Wheat, sugar, dairy. World food prices are up, in part, on increased demand. More people with more money hungry for more food. But prices for each of the ingredients in our bread are up for other, more specific reasons, too. The wheat?
Well, the wheat market was probably most severely affected by the very bad crop that occurred in Russia and Ukraine last year.
Paul Westhoff heads the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. The sugar, he says there are two factors at play. Bad weather's cut supplies, and Brazil is using sugar for ethanol. And with dairy prices, it's a combination of rising grain and feed prices and a production cutback. Farmers cut their herds during the recession. But all these factors driving up global food prices remain unlikely to make a huge dent in grocery budgets here in the U.S. That's partly because of government policies and because
only about 20% of the value of the food we consume can be attributed to the cost of the food as it leaves the farm.
To be super precise, according to the USDA, for every dollar we spend on food, farmers get about 16 cents from the sale of raw food commodities. A big chunk of the rest goes to people who process the food, the people who prepare the food, and the retailers who sell it, which explains why, when the price of wheat goes up 50%, the price of our bread doesn't spike with it. The USDA is guessing U.S. food prices will go up about 3 to 4% this year. And there's another reason that rising food prices aren't as problematic in this country as they are in other places.
You know, in the United States, we spend less than 10% of our household budget overall on average on food.
Rosamond Naylor heads the Program on Food Security and the Environment at Stanford. She says compare that to Asia and Africa.
Many of those households are spending 60, 70, even 80% of their household budgets on food. And so any kind of a price spike really makes a difference to their ability to feed themselves and their households.
So even when the price of my whole wheat bread inches up at the grocery, my morning toast is unlikely to become a luxury item. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
And finally, could one of the most familiar icons of the hippiest generation that ever was be making a trip back to the future? The 60s. After all these years, Volkswagen has updated the VW minibus, complete with a new cutting-edge zero-emission electric engine.
Oh, wow.
And it's showing off the concept vehicle this week at the Geneva Motor Show. The German carmaker says it could inspire the return of the minibus to the VW lineup. Now, one analyst who's seen it says it's very cool looking, Steve.
Groovy, right?
Groovy. You know, I don't know, though. Some of the comments, the early comments on our website don't reflect much wow factor here.
Yeah.
One person posted a comment saying, it's not a van, it's just another fat car. Another one said, overinflated Mini Cooper. There's Mini no Cooper. Camping. Ooh. Or room for my board.
Oh, my goodness. What kind of a surfboard?
That's right. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Hey, dude.
Yeah.
You can check it out for yourself. We posted a picture on our website, marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon.
I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.